Daddy gang, it is your founding father, Alex Cooper, with Call Her Daddy.
Lucy Hale, welcome to Call Her Daddy.
Thank you.
I am so happy that I'm finally meeting you.
This is happening. We're here.
We're here.
I was just saying, your room is exactly how I thought it would make me feel.
Oh, cozy.
This is so great. Thank you for having
cozy.
Me.
Cozy. You also just told me that your mom is a fan of Call Her Daddy, so I'm immediately like, bow down, Mama Hale.
Hi Julie. Yeah, I was talking to her last night, and she was just like, how's your jet lag? What are you doing tomorrow? I was like, I'm actually doing a podcast. And she goes, which one? I said, Call Her Daddy. She goes, I love Call Her Daddy. I was like, Mom. She knows all the cool things. She actually keeps me young.
I love that for you. And I love that for me because a mother liking the show is the highest compliment. So yeah. Hello, Julie.
You're doing so many things right.
This episode is presented by Sparkling Ice. Turn up summer with Sparkling Ice. They have over 17 anything but subtle flavors, all made with zero sugar and packed with vitamins and antioxidants. Iced tea and lemonade, strawberry watermelon, tropical punch, peach nectarine. Yum. Crank up the flavor. Sparkling Ice. Anything but subtle. This episode is brought to you by Curology. If you have particular skincare challenges, it can be really frustrating to waste time and money on products that just are absolutely not formulated for you. That is why I'm so excited to recommend Curology. I have personally struggled with acne my whole life, and I'll look at someone on YouTube or TikTok or Instagram and be like, should I buy those products? No, I do not have the same skin as them, so I should not be treating it the same. Curology's personalized prescriptions are formulated to treat your individual skin needs, from acne to the earliest signs of aging. All you have to do is go online, take a quick quiz, and you will be connected to a licensed dermatology provider that will create a custom formula based on your skincare needs. If you're ready to start your skincare journey and start seeing results, here is a special offer just for you. Visit Curology.com/callherdaddy for a special offer. That's Curology, Curology.com/callherdaddy. Offer applies only to your first box, subject to consultation, new subscribers only, subscription required. This episode is brought to you by eBay. You know real when you get it, right, Daddy Gang? It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee, and you'll feel it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. So ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit eBay.com for terms. Tap the banner to learn more.
I want to go back to the beginning because I feel like obviously we've seen you on television, but maybe there are people that are like, where are you from? I don't know you. So
who
are you, Lucy? Let's get
into
it.
I'm still figuring it out. Yeah.
So obviously you moved to LA super young, but you grew up in Memphis, Tennessee.
I did.
Can you talk to me about like, what were you like as a child?
I lived in Tennessee till I was 15, mm-hmm. and kind of split a lot of my time with my mom, who was in Memphis, and my dad, who lived in Mississippi. Right. Very simple upbringing, like two hardworking parents. My dad's a farmer. My mom is a nurse. I was a very sensitive child. I still consider myself a sensitive gal, which I now view as like a good thing. Yeah. But growing up, you know, I just felt like very emotional and very kind of misunderstood, which is I think why I wanted to become an entertainer, because I felt like, oh, what an amazing outlet for me to ultimately be anyone other than myself. So I think you know, as a kid I was having all of these thoughts and I just needed a place to put all these feelings, and yeah. So I started taking singing lessons and acting lessons, and my mom and I moved to California when I was 15, and I never left. So I've been here 19 going on 20 years.
Can you talk a little bit about that, of like feeling misunderstood? Like, give me an example.
I think, you know, whether I was misunderstood or not, who really knows? But in my little sensitive child brain, I was like, I felt like an alien. I felt like an alien amongst my friends. I felt like an alien in my family sometimes. And I can't really pinpoint like the moment in my life where that all started happening. Mm-hmm. But I do remember having a feeling at a very young age of being like, I think in this life, like, I have myself, and we're going to have to get through it by myself. I don't know where that came from. I have no idea. But, you know, I felt like being artistic and being emotional, I couldn't really find a good friend group growing up. And I think that that's where that feeling of being misunderstood started. I do consider myself really introverted, actually, which is like, people are always surprised to say that because of my job, which is like very extroverted. But my job makes me feel really uncomfortable sometimes. And I think that being an actor, it's, I'm hiding behind a veil of something. Like, the last couple years of my life, because of my job and like finding success pretty early on and doing all of these things, I didn't get a chance to figure out who I actually was. Mm-hmm. And if I did, I didn't really like who I was. So I was like running away from myself for so long.
Yep.
For so long. And so the last couple of years, I think, and this is to tie it back around, I think I was feeling so misunderstood by a lot of people for so long because I didn't understand myself. How can other people understand you if you have no fucking idea who you are?
It's so interesting you say that, because when I started dating my now fiance, I like grew up in Pennsylvania. I looked at actors like gods, and I thought that they had the best lives in the world. And my fiance being a producer, like, I started to talk to him about the industry more, and he was like, I have a lot of empathy for actors, because what people don't see on the other side of it is like, we fall in love with you and your character of like who you play on a certain TV show or whatever it is, or in a movie. But what you guys are dealing with is like, you're handed a script that you're told to like get into character of this person, and you can really lean in. But like, there's a lack of like autonomy of like actually having control in a lot of these ways. So people are falling in love with something that like, you tried to bring to life, but it's also not you. So it's like kind of a weird thing of like,
it is weird. It is weird. And then also being a part of something that lasted for so long, and being a part of that while I was figuring out who I was like, I don't even, am I this character, or am I me? Like, and then seeing people fall in love with this experience and fall in love with that character, I'm like, well, maybe I should be more like this character, because I don't really know who I am. And I can only obviously speak from my experience, but I do find that a lot of actors feel similar in the sense of like, I think we fall into this line of work because we're kind of filling some sort of void. It's like, on some level, we're all like a little broken, or like a little or a lot insecure. In my case, I was like, I think this is gonna make me feel like I'm whole if all these people like me and I book these jobs and I look a certain way. And does it temporarily feel great? Hell yeah, I'm not gonna lie. Like, it does feel great. I love my job. I love certain aspects of it. But that doesn't fix what's broken in you. And it makes it worse.
I was going to say, it's almost like you can like hide even more behind it, and also go down a trail of like,
oh my God,
I can imagine, you're so young and you're like, is this my personality? Like, am I like this? Like, do I like this type of man? Like,
it's, I was like, even dressing like the character off camera. And of course, I'm like, you know, I started that when I was 20 years old. Right. So.
But still, like, I would be fucked up being like, first, I also want to know, because obviously Memphis is so wildly different than Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And so before you move, at what age did your parents get divorced?
I think I was 4, and I have very vivid memories of like the conversation. Mm-hmm. And somehow knowing at that age that it was a good thing.
Why did you feel that way? Did you see them fight a lot?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It wasn't very calm. I think there was a lot of chaos in the house. And
as we get older, we start to realize, like, even when you were saying, like, I was introverted, like, I felt misunderstood. as I've gone through therapy, I'm like, so much of why we are the way we are, it's before even peer dynamics. It's like what was happening in your house.
Well, don't they say that you are who you are between the ages of 2 and 5?
Yeah.
Well, holy crap. Right, like, right. You know, like that was when things really blew up. And I think at a very young age, that is when like my desire to please everyone started. Like I just wanted everyone to be happy. I wanted mom to be happy. I wanted my dad to be protected. I've always been like fiercely protective of my dad. And I think as a kid, everything is personal. You think everything's your fault. So you're like, okay, if I just act a certain way, then maybe mommy and daddy will be happy and life will be perfect. Yeah. And I find that a lot of women feel similar to me in the people pleasing. I think it's holy moly.
We could do a whole episode on that.
I mean, and undoing it, I'm in like the process of undoing being a people pleaser because it's so hard for my brain to accept that I can be nice and set boundaries. Because all of my 20s, I was like, you know what? If I'm the nicest one, people will like me more. And it's like, well, that's just not. That's complete abandonment of self.
So you're just like, I'll just take it and I'll just be quiet on that or whatever. But then you start to be like, okay, wait, why am I getting taken advantage of like all the time? Yeah. And it's difficult to like start to do something and go against something that like you have done your whole life the opposite way.
Yeah, I think at a young age, I just realized I just wanted people to like me. I always felt like life would be fine if, you know, everyone was happy and people just accepted me. And I'm like, God, that's sad that at a young age I felt those things.
But even you saying like when you're in your house being like, if I'm the peacemaker, like maybe things will calm down. Like I think that's like it can weave into then like your peer dynamics of like you're just like, keep the peace. Everybody like me. Like I just want to like be here, be quiet. Yeah. Like don't
exactly. speak up. It's the quiet thing.
But I do think it's really relatable, especially I think as women of like, wanting to be noticed and seen and heard, and then also feeling deeply insecure when you are being seen and heard, because we're basically taught to doubt ourselves. Like it's different with men. Like as girls, it's like, be polite, sit down, be ladylike, be the it's like am I doing it right? And I think it can create a lot of like division in your brain of like what you want versus like what your natural instinct is, which is like, and then what society has taught us like of how to be. So I am with you on that, girl.
I vividly, vividly remember a moment in my life. I was upstairs. I was with my karaoke machine. I think I was like singing something from Pink.
Love it.
And I remember thinking, my life will be different. My life is going to be different. I don't belong here.
Don't you think that's like a normal human instinct though, that like when you're in such a situation, like I felt that way with my Catholic school upbringing of like so Catholic. Every Sunday we had to go to church, we had to do this. When you're in like a system that is like forcing you to like be a specific way, your brain can't help but be like, what if I just went that way? But you can't help but be like is this it?
I'm just completely agree. I'm just laughing because I love Kelly Clarkson and there's that song Breakaway. I was like, that was the moment. I'm like, we're getting out of here, baby. Like, and we did is what's crazy.
Right.
And so this moment, I remember it was like, I was sitting on this like crazy shaggy carpet we had upstairs and I was like, no, we're going to do some things. And of course I didn't know what that meant. I just intuitively knew that I wanted something special and different for myself.
Dude, I'm dying thinking of you up in your bedroom, like, and break away.
Little Lucy. Also, I thought I was going to be Kelly Clarkson 2.0.
Oh, didn't we all? Back to Lucy.
Anyway, back to you.
Okay, so you say you moved to LA when you are 15. Okay, and what I read, your mom had to take out her retirement money to get you guys there. Did you feel like excited, guilty, pressure?
I'm not gonna lie, I felt zero guilt. But only because I knew it was gonna work out. I think as time went on, I did feel a little guilt of what my mom actually sacrificed. And I often am like, that was truly unhinged that we drove across the country and you know, she was a nurse and she would work nights. She would drive me to my auditions during the day and sleep in the car.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, she's amazing. My mom moved back to Tennessee when I was 17, because by then I was doing little jobs here and there, enough to, you know, go spend my money at Forever 21 and have a shitty apartment. But things started moving, like, relatively quickly when we got here, enough for my mom to be like, okay.
Yeah.
But it's also really interesting, because when I look back at that experience, it, instead of, like, if I'm completely transparent, instead of thinking of all the amazing things, which I can now, like, hold so much gratitude and space for that, I look back on that and I think of all the things that were happening behind the scenes and how I was feeling and the things I was dealing with and the things I was running away from and the pressure of being on this show that was so adored by people. And so I think it's okay for, like, to hold space for how amazing it was, but also to know that, like, that was very painful and challenging for me to navigate.
Yeah.
Because I think what was going on behind the scenes were things I would have no doubt dealt with whether I lived in Tennessee, Timbuktu, or LA. Mm-hmm. I know that because, like, we talked about, these things happen when you're a tiny baby child, you know? And so I don't know on what end of the spectrum it would have been on, but I do know that the success and the notoriety and everything happening really ramped up the intense feelings that I was, like, desperately trying to shove in that emotional baggage trunk.
When I hear you saying that too, I feel like, which I think this is, like, the beauty of people, and I think it's gotten so much better in the past few years of, like, finally people starting to actually speak about things that they experience. Like, I think about Rob Pattinson and Kristen Stewart for so long not wanting to talk about Twilight, and people, like, because when you have these, like, beloved projects that we as viewers are just like, I love you, we love it, this is perfect, we are obsessed with you girls, we love you all, are you guys all best friends, do you guys all love each other, is everything perfect, there's this, like, idealization of it that I think, as you guys, as the characters in it, probably feel this responsibility to, like, smile through and be like, we love it, because you're the image, like, you are almost responsible for keeping all these, like, young girls' dreams alive of how much they loved the show, and you don't want to be like, I was struggling while I was doing this, but you're also a human being and that was your reality, and you're talking obviously about how there are things going on behind the scenes. Talk to me.
Yes, so I will say that I didn't graduate high school, and so that's a little context of, you know, I was emancipated at 17. It's taken me many years, many breakdowns, many experiences to realize what I was actually feeling in those moments. I think any young female, no matter where you are, what you do, you feel pressure. You want to look a certain way. You want to be a certain weight. You, like, you just want people to accept you and to like you. You want, not maybe not everyone, maybe there are some healthier mindset liars, but, you know, you want attention from guys. You just want to be liked. Simply put, you want to be liked. And so I, before I had even booked, I struggled heavily with the eating disorder. And, like, looking back now, it's, you know, I look at a picture and I don't think, oh, wow, like, I'm like, oh, I can tell exactly based off of my weight or what was going on, what I was going through at the time. I was not healthy. And it, you know, and it makes me sad almost because obviously no one else knew that I wasn't healthy, but to know that young women were watching this show, and I, of course, I didn't know who I was yet, but I was, I just want people to know that's not I was not in a good place, and so I, you know, I was dealing with the eating stuff and the food stuff, which ultimately is just feeling completely out of control. Once again, would have dealt with this no matter what I did for a living, but it's kind of, you know, I chose an industry that, like, really heightened all of that for me. Like, I have very vivid memories of watching some of the show and being like disgusted as and being like, well, we gotta stop eating, we gotta, and it was just because I was overwhelmed. Like, yeah. I'm not sure how I would have done it any differently. Like, I was doing the best I could, and it did, I think, like, having that kind of control over my body or my weight, it did make me feel good, because I was like, mm-hmm. my life is changing, and I don't know where I fit in the show with these girls. Like, at least I have this one thing that I can control.
That's interesting. You're yeah. like, that's the one thing that you knew you were in full control of, even if it was unhealthy and hurting you. You were, it like,
gave me this false sense of security, and I held on to that for a really long time.
Can you talk to me about that? Because I think that the dynamic of having these beautiful women on set, you mm-hmm. yourself included, we all compare ourselves. Like, mm-hmm. I look back to myself in high school and, like, the jealousy of, like, the girl that I was like, oh my God, she's so beautiful, I want to look like her. And, like, it's just how we are conditioned as women of, like,
yeah.
who's the prettiest in the group, who's the yeah. skinniest, who's the this. Like, how did you handle that with all of you being yeah. so gorgeous and you're all staring at each other?
I think at the time I would have told myself, like, we're not competitive. And of course, I'm only speaking from me. Of course I felt the pressure not to be prettier or to look better, but to, like, keep up. Because mm-hmm. I did look at Shay and Troy and Sasha and Janelle and Ashley, and I was like, what the fuck? These are angels yeah. amongst me. And, like, do I fit into that? Mm-hmm. There was often, it was more, and people always wanted to pit us against each other. Mm-hmm. And were we all best friends? No.
Yeah.
Some of us connected, some of us did not. Did we have rough patches? Of course. We were in our fucking 20s. Right. Of course. Right.
Like, obviously.
But, like, there was always a lot of love, I feel like. But yeah, there was a lot of nights where I'm like, okay, I don't know how to keep up with this. I don't know if I want to keep up with this. Mm-hmm. This is, and it, like, would eat away at me.
Yeah.
And I don't know how, I've actually never talked to them, the other girls, about this. I don't know if they felt the same way. Mm-hmm. I also think that it's different now where women are more supportive of each other. Mm-hmm. I think it's kind of ingrained in us as women. It's like in our DNA that, like, there can only be one.
Yep.
It's fucking bullshit.
It's so fucking crazy. And it's not, like, we've all been conditioned that way. And it's like, we can all thrive. We can all
thrive and look amazing and be amazing and be mm-hmm. kind and root for each mm-hmm. other. There's enough room. I just, like, that sort of mindset of, like, there's not enough for everyone is yeah. like the scarcity mindset is very, and I think there was an element of that on the show, because realistically, like, there were magazine covers, they were only choosing one, and that's just human nature. It wasn't yeah. that I didn't want to root for them. I did. I love them. I still love them to this day. Like, I'm so proud that we maintained a level of, like, it felt like family, you know. You don't always vibe with certain family members, but, like, your family, right?
Yeah.
But God, and I see all these, like, new shows with young women, and I'm like, oh, I know what it right. probably feels like.
Right, you were there.
Yeah.
When you,
but also, it's also, that's high school too. Oh,
that,
you know,
well, no, that's what
I, that was my high school.
It's so crazy. I get frustrated when, I'm not saying people have to be fighting, but, like, you can tell, it's like, there's no fucking way on every cast that everyone gets along. Like, sure, we can glamorize, like, but we love our show. It's our favorite show. It's like, babe, if you yeah. put 5, 6, 7 girls in a fucking room, yeah. like, not everyone's going to get along.
Yeah. And I think some of the gals really did connect and bond in a big way. And I've always found it tricky to connect with people, because I like to connect. This is why we're vibing, because yeah. we're talking about, like, the things I love to talk about. Mm-hmm. And I just always, not only on that show, I've found it trickier to find the people that I want to connect with. And so I would kind of just sit in my little corner and, like, mm-hmm. live in my own world and tell myself, you know, that I was misunderstood. But in reality, it's just certain people connect and certain people don't connect. But mm-hmm. I did feel kind of a pressure because I remember sometimes reading online that the fans of the show would notice that I wasn't in pictures with certain people. And I think that's where these rumors started of, like, they don't like Lucy or, right. And it really wasn't that. It was just like, I was marching to the beat of my own drum. Yeah. And I didn't, and I knew the perception of it, and I maybe knew how it was coming across, but I also knew that I wasn't going to force.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's something to happen.
Well, it's very similar to what you described as your childhood. Like,
exactly.
You're sitting there feeling mm-hmm. misunderstood. You're very in your own mm-hmm. head. You're alone. You're emotional, mm-hmm. but you're like kind of a loner. You're like, I had maybe like not as many friends, and I was kind of like introverted. That yeah. doesn't just fucking change because you get on a cool set with a bunch of cool chicks no. and you're like, oh my God, we're all famous now. Like, you're still the same Lucy in Tennessee. Yeah. So it's like that. I appreciate you saying that, because I do think a lot of times people are like, why can't I be a certain way? And especially when you're in a room with women maybe that are more outgoing or more clicky yeah. and connecting. That's yeah. just fucking life.
I think that was it. Yeah. I think I've had to accept that. I just so desperately, when I was younger, I wanted to be, have a, it wasn't even that I wanted to look differently. Mm-hmm. I wanted to have a different personality. Mm-hmm. I was like, damn it, why am I not more fun? I always mm-hmm. felt like boring, and I felt like I didn't have a lot to say. Mm-hmm. I definitely, because I didn't graduate high school, was like, oh, well, I'm not smart. People aren't going to listen to me. Mm-hmm. I had built like all of these narratives in my head where I was like, this is the truth. I'm going to stand by it. which I'm sure we'll talk about, which is why your girl wanted to drink, right? Because I could be fun. I could be sexy. I could be hysterical. I could be a bitch. I could be mm-hmm. whatever I wanted to be. And my brain shut off. But like, undoing all of these narratives that I believed and stood by for so mm-hmm. long has been the biggest challenge of my life. Harder than giving up drinking. Yeah. Harder than my career. It's like actually rewiring my brain into believing like, no, I am smart. I do have shit that's important that I want to
yeah.
say.
Yeah.
I'm worthy. I am more than the way I look. Like yeah. all of these things that we tell ourselves. Yeah. And I love it. Now I love, like, I have an addictive personality, but now I'm like driven by this need to, okay, I want to know more about myself. I want to do more. I want to be better. I want to
understand
learn all yeah. I can learn.
Yeah. yeah. No, I get what you're saying about, like, which is so hard. And again, I think a lot of women can relate to that, of like having something in your head that you believe about yourself. And if you asked your friend or your family member, they'd be like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
We no, like, we yeah. you're so smart, or you're so talented, or you're so this, what are you talking? It's like, we are our own yeah. worst enemy. And if it goes down too far into a dark hole, like, it is just, you own it and you believe it. And it's mm-hmm. like, how do you even begin to like unravel that? Because you have to yeah. live your day-to-day life. You're still yeah. going on with your job and your interactions. It's
and
like,
that's what you're broadcasting to the world energetically. I would make myself feel very small mm-hmm. and that my ideas didn't matter, because if I walked into a room, everyone else's ideas were more important than mine.
Mm-hmm.
And it had to, I think it had to do with this idea of not feeling smart, or feeling like mm-hmm. people didn't care.
Okay. Okay. Let's talk about, you have talked about your journey with sobriety before. Mm-hmm. And I kind of want to just, I've never talked about alcoholism on Call Her Daddy. I've never talked about struggling with alcohol. I've never talked about
I'm the sober.
You're the
cherry popper.
You are popping it right now, Lucy.
Cherry.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Some things work so well. It's basically magic. Like my favorite highlighters that I'm like, wow, how did you all of a sudden make me look glowing? And you know what else really works, Dottie Gang? Shopify. It is a global commerce platform that helps you sell. I've seen a big difference in my online merch sales. They are especially good at turning browsers into buyers. I can see someone that's been on the site but didn't check out, or someone that checked out and then is revisiting the site. Like, if you want to grow your business, Dottie Gang, sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/unwell, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/unwell.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Let's go back to the beginning of what age did you like first try alcohol?
In the womb. No, I'm just kidding.
My mother gave me a little taste of tequila.
Okay, the first time ever that I tried alcohol? Yeah, or like
maybe when you started drinking.
I mean, I will say the first time I ever had alcohol, mm-hmm. I think it's important to talk about because I was probably 12, okay. 13. And I was in Florida on a vacation. I was like wearing a crop top. Halter top thing. For some reason, I remember the shirt I was wearing. And we drank Green Apple Pucker, which is a chaser. Anyway, I remember my very first experience with alcohol was exactly how it was when it ended. I blacked out at 12. Blacked out at 12 years old. Damn. I don't remember what happened. I got very sick. I threw up. And I remember being so distraught when I realized what had happened. And I was like, oh my God, my mom is going to be so disappointed in me. Like, I feel so scared.
Right.
And that's at 12. So I didn't start regular. Of course, I drank here and there from 12 to 18. But right. I remember shame every experience after drinking because my drinking was never normal.
Right.
I never drank normally. And I mean, literally every time I drank, I wasn't always sloppy blacking out.
Yeah.
A lot of the time I was, but I was drinking. It was very clear I was drinking to escape something, mm-hmm. even at a young age. Mm-hmm. And so I would say around like age 18 when my mom moved back to Tennessee is when it was happening a lot.
Yep.
But I also, you're like a teenager. I didn't realize I had a problem
yep.
until my early 20s when okay. I'm like, why do I still want to drink after a night out? Like, why can't I just have two glasses of wine? Mm-hmm. Why am I thinking about drinking all the time? Why do I feel so uncomfortable if I'm not drinking when I'm out? It was like all of these questions, and I don't know if I ever talked about this before. This might be a first. I went to rehab when I was 23. Right. I don't even think anyone on the show knew, and it was my choice too. That was like a very pivotal moment in my life. I like wasn't ready to give up drinking, which is why I didn't get sober until I was 32. But okay. There was like deep fear of what would happen if I continued acting this way for a very long time. And when I tell you I had tried so many different things, rehab, outpatient, inpatient, trauma center, therapy, medication, you name it. And I there was always like a very strong desire to want to stop. Mm-hmm. But I think just being, I don't know how I would have gotten sober in my 20s in LA on a being successful. Like I, which is why I have so much empathy for people in the media that are struggling. Cause I was like, it's so fucking hard.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I just was in this very sad cycle for yeah. all of my 20s.
Can I? Okay.
Yeah.
First of all, thank you for sharing that. Because,
yeah.
again, it almost goes back to, like, there's, like, the career that you want to uphold. And you mm-hmm. want to, like, be remembered for something great.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean you can't also be open about the struggles you were going through, but I do think it's difficult for people to be like, am I allowed to, like, should I say this about myself? Like, will people want to work with me? Like, should I even, like, I can imagine that goes through your head, because I know people don't open up probably for that fucking reason.
There was no way in hell I was going to openly talk about this. Mm-hmm. I was so deeply ashamed of myself and my choices and the person I was when I drank.
Yeah.
There was no, it is actually mind-blowing. Like, if you would have told me at that age, you know, 10 years from now, you're going to be doing a podcast and you're going to be talking about being sober and alcoholism, I would have said, you are fucking insane. No, because these things I'm talking about, I'm only able to speak about them because I have actively worked through and let go of the shame that was so ingrained in who I was. I don't feel like I don't really blame anyone for not helping. You know, the people in my inner circle definitely knew, my friends, my family, my sweet manager, but no one on the show really knew because I didn't talk about it. And so I think there was a lot of maybe concern from people. And people also were like, how did you maintain a job? Well, my drinking was very... It was binge drinking, so I wasn't drinking every day, but when I would drink...
You would drink.
It was like, bye.
That's what I was going to say. Can you take me to, like, what would a typical night or day of drinking be like for you back then?
So it usually would start, and I was... Because my job was very important to me, like, I think maybe only... I never let it come... interfere with that, because, like, I knew if I lost that, I would... not be okay. It doesn't mean it didn't seep through the cracks sometimes, because, like, I did show up to work hungover sometimes. I can look at pictures of my eyes and I'm like, oh, you hungover bitch.
I know what you were up to last night.
Exactly. And so I think it was maybe clear to people, people aren't dumb. That's the thing about, like, addicts, alcoholics. You think you're being so secretive. I feel it in a room. I know. I know. And like, in a non-judgy way, I'm just like, oh, I think they're struggling. You know? And
isn't that so interesting? And then you probably walked in being like, no one knows.
No one knows.
And maybe they're like,
yeah,
Lucy, you reek. Yeah, or like, exactly. Lucy, you, like,
your eyes are bloodshot. Right. Or did you sleep? But okay, a night of.
Yes.
You know, it kind of looked, that was a scary thing, is it was a wild card. And I was always like, well, this could be a really fun, because some nights don't, I also, like, in hindsight, I look back, I had some great memories drinking, super fun, but you never knew what you were going to get. So some nights would be, you know, great. I'd be home at a decent hour. I'd, you know, chug some water before bed and take some Advil and I'd wake up and feel fine. Or it would be a night that turned into a Saturday that turned into a Sunday where I'm like, why are there drugs on the table? Like, who are these people? Why are these people in my house? Like, it would just be all over the place.
Yeah.
And I think I was also attracting people in my life that were also really struggling. And I think one thing, and also I just think that anyone who's listening to this, I get really emotional. Lucy, don't cry. I cry all the time.
You can cry.
I just think something that really... something that really I struggled with a lot growing up is, like, I remember people, some people I worked with, some people in my friend group that just thought I was a wild child and thought I just like to party and, like, ooh, it's gonna be, or like, people wouldn't invite me places because they knew how it would get. And I just want to say that anyone who behaves that way, it's clearly coming from a place of pain. And so anyone who may or may not be struggling with this, like, I think it's so important. And what's really helped me is, like, you have to find the people who get it. Find people who understand and that you can connect with, because you're not fucking alone in that feeling. And, like, I think I felt that for so much of my life. I was like, It was the misunderstood thing, yeah. right? And then it was like actually being reflected back to me because I was being misunderstood because right. I was like, I don't just like to chug tequila or yeah. I did, but like, right. But I'm also like in pain.
I'm in pain.
And I also remember vividly, I will not name names, but I remember vividly hearing someone who was in kind of my inner circle at the mm-hmm. time saying, God, sober people are so boring. And I was like, you know what? Sober people, at the time I was like, sober people are boring. Am I boring? And I also want to say to anyone who might be struggling, I remember Miley Cyrus said one time, she's like, "There, you can say a lot of things about me." It was like, yeah. because I think she mm-hmm. she was talking about sobriety. She was like, but I am not boring. I find some of the most interesting, complex, beautiful human beings that I know struggle in this way. And that is your gift. Don't let anyone ever tell you, like, your mistakes don't define you. Like, yeah. your sensitivity, because I find that a lot of sensitive people turn to alcohol, turn to drugs, because you're trying to numb down your gifts. Mm-hmm. Oh, can you Dude. Tell I could talk about this all
no,
the time?
No, it's really powerful because I feel really, I have seen it too. Like, I've had people in my life that I'm like, oh my God, like, I know you're struggling, but it is hard to be with someone that is blacking out, that is a liability.
Like, I'm not gonna lie, difficult. Like, it's hard,
but yeah. it's obvious they're struggling, and I yeah. think that's the thing that you're right, people don't have any fucking grace or time for it in moments. And I think
yeah.
you were clearly struggling, I guess, you kind of having this like binge moment and then being able to get to work. Like, I relate a lot, and you don't even have to be someone that like struggles so much with alcohol to the point where like I've been in moments in my life where like staying out late and partying, nothing ever good comes from it. And I remember like,
no,
I remember the moments in when I was living in New York, I'd gone through a really bad breakup and I was really struggling with like party culture, just felt like I wanted to be a part of it because I felt like I could, I don't know. I felt really alone at that yeah. point in my life. My friends weren't in the city. I was like, I have no one. And so I found this group of people that were always partying, drugs,
and you bond
alcohol.
Over that. Totally. There is like there should be a whole conversation about mm-hmm. the people you bond with
when
in
you're
that
partying.
Way. Yeah.
And so I remember like I had never done drugs. Because I'd played soccer my whole life. Like, I'd never done that. And I remember getting into a phase in New York where like, I tried drugs, and like
yeah.
I would be at an after party and there were drugs on the table, and it was also because I'm drinking. If I was sober, I'm not doing the drugs.
I'm the same way.
Right?
Yeah.
But all of a sudden you find yourself, and I wonder if mm-hmm. if you're comfortable talking about that, yeah. of like how you can also slip into like when you're drunk.
Anything goes, baby.
And
anything.
You're like, is that cocaine? Is that a cigarette? Is that a, what are we doing?
What is, yeah. And what is, who is that? Yeah,
who is
you
that?
Know?
And you have no idea where it even came from.
Girl.
And you're not going to be smart. You're just going to take it.
Girl, it's so interesting because yes, just what you said. Like, I would have never thought to do cocaine if I weren't drinking. But, mm-hmm. but I think alcohol was just this gateway into being whoever I wanted to be. I didn't have to be sweet. I could be sloppy. And yeah, I could do cocaine if I wanted to. You know what? I could sleep with that guy if I wanted to. And maybe his friend. You know? It's
right.
like,
right.
not that I'm, you know, no. I look back and I have compassion because I was like, oh, babe. But it was just, I didn't have an outlet in my regular normal mm-hmm. life to like release this wild side and yeah. release this bad side. Because ultimately, like, I still have those elements to me.
Right.
That doesn't go away. Your shadow side is fucking cool, mm-hmm. I think. Mm-hmm. And so I've had to learn how to be friends with these things that brought me shame.
Yeah.
And that people, and the other thing was like, I knew people were talking shit about me. I knew people were not even spreading rumors. It was the truth.
Yeah.
And I just tried to cover it up for so long.
Yeah.
And that even fueled more drinking. So it was like, how do I get out of this cycle? It's gonna kill me,
literally.
Yeah. Oh, well,
did you ever have like a moment where it was like you're in the hospital and mm-hmm. you wake up?
Yeah, I was never I never wanted to die, yeah. but like the way I was acting, mm-hmm. sometimes I'm like, wow, it's a, I would wake up and be like, well, it's kind of a miracle I'm here.
Here.
I did have moments where I would have to go to the hospital and like get IVs. Yeah, you know, it got really dark.
Yep.
I'm not even going to lie. It got really dark. I was very sad. I was very scared. I think ultimately I was like, okay, well, we have some options. I'll be sober. I'm almost 2 years sober.
Congrats.
Thank you. And it feels great. Like, I feel so stoked to be able to talk about these things and to know that I'm good. Like, and I think there are so many times in my career where I'd wanted to talk about it, but I knew I didn't have a grip on it. And the thing is, like, this is something I work on every day. Yeah. I choose myself every moment of every day because I have to, because I want to be here and I want to live a full life.
Yeah.
But when I decided to get sober at 32, I was like, okay, we have some options. I can keep doing what I've been doing for the last 15 years. There's the risk of something really bad happening. Or we can get sober and we can actually do it. Because I would always kind of half-ass do it.
Yeah.
And I truly, there's no other way to say it other than it was like a spiritual intervention. Like, I literally felt the presence of God, like, actually telling me, you don't have another chance. Like, I truly felt it in my bones that, like, this is it.
Yeah.
What are we going to do with it? And I remember I was flying back from Austin after a whirlwind New Year's Eve trip, like, shaking. I was eating a gross ham sandwich, like, trying just to get food in my stomach because I hadn't eaten in, like, 2 days. I had my dog in my lap. I was like, okay, we're going to do it. We're going to do this. And then I ended up, the week I got sober, I actually got COVID too. And I think without that, I would have made excuses. I think because I was forced to stay home, I was forced to call these certain people, connect with certain people, put myself in these rooms and groups of people that truly saved my life. I think without having COVID, I might not have gotten sober or committed to it. And I don't know, man, like, I feel so strong in my path right now, and I don't know. Every day is changes. Yeah. Like, I was just traveling internationally, and like airports and airplanes are always make me a little edgy. I'm like, because that's where I loved to drink. Put me in a lounge, put me on
right,
a plane.
Right.
I was like, I'm 30,000 feet away from everyone that drives me crazy.
Yeah,
you know. So it's really just like, okay, being gentle with myself and really having a plan of, okay, I know I'm going to be on a couple planes coming up. How are we going to take care of myself?
Yep.
Being sober is 100% the best thing I've ever done for myself. It does not mean that it's easy. I think I have talked about it publicly, and I think it's been portrayed as like, life is great. Life is amazing. Has it made my life better? 100,000,000%. But it's deeply uncomfortable and it is deeply painful, but it is so worth it.
Yeah. Dude, yeah, that's what I think is, you're so right. It's like when you come out and say, like, I'm sober, everyone's like, oh my God, she has it together.
Yeah.
Like, she's great. And you're like, this is something that you have to wake up every day and make the choice to not have a drink.
To not have a drink. And it's made me realize, like, how much I was escaping in other ways, too. Like, your girl will do anything to avoid an uncomfortable feeling.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, let's go. I'm on Amazon. Like, I do need this new blender. I already have 10 blenders. You know what I'm saying? Spend money. Men. Like, I have avoided my shit for a long time by being with people I didn't really want to be with. Yeah. Just, like, complete avoidance.
Can we talk about that for a minute?
Yeah.
Because something that really hit me, and this is like so dark, but I remember
I've never loved you more.
Okay. So I don't know if I've ever said this on the podcast, but I was in this relationship where I was in it for the wrong reasons. It was so awful, like, just in ways like emotionally abusive and just like really not healthy. Mm-hmm. And I was staying for the wrong reasons, but I remember there would be nights that I knew he would want to have sex and I did not want to have sex with him.
Yeah.
So before he would come home, I would go into the kitchen and take shots by myself and I would drink so that I could have sex with him.
Yeah.
And what's so crazy in that moment is like, I knew, like, what the fuck am I doing? Like, why am I hiding, quickly drinking, then going and brushing my teeth so he doesn't know, so that I'm fucked up, so that I can have sex with this person? Aww. Like, so fucking sad. But I'm thinking about you and I'm like, can you talk to me a little bit about like this sexual aspect of being drunk or being on drugs while you're drunk and like being in this situation, which is like pretty unsafe. Like, what sexual situations did you get yourself into that like you'd wake up and be like,
Oh my God. And this is definitely, you know, I've talked about my sobriety story a little, but I've never talked about that element of it. Yeah. And I think it's a really important thing to talk about, because I think a lot of people can relate to that, whether you're an alcoholic or not.
Totally.
And also like being sober and dating and being sexual was like a whole new thing I had to learn, because a lot of my, most of my relationships and my, the people I had slept with, like I was always fucked up. And I felt so deeply uncomfortable in my body and in my skin. And whether you struggle or not, when you drink, you automatically feel a little bit sexier. You're like, I totally look amazing.
You're like, I'm
at
ready.
At least I would have like a 10-minute window where I was like, we've got it together. Mm-hmm. And then the dark thoughts would roll in. But I mean, there's definitely been, I think that's where some of my shame still lies, is in the people I've allowed to, the people I've allowed myself to be with. And I know for certain I've potentially, I don't even know if I want to say that. I maybe have been taken advantage of. Mm-hmm. Not to say that these people, no, I'm not making excuses for people.
I was going to say,
I've been taken advantage of. Yes, I was the person drinking, but I, there are certain things I don't quite remember. But then it's also, so I've slept with people I regret sleeping with.
Of course,
You know?
Yeah.
But I also think, like, in the relationships I was in, I really relate to what you're saying about, like, needing to drink to be physical. And for me, it wasn't like I wasn't attracted to these men. I was, but I was so uncomfortable with myself or their perception of me that it was easier to be in a different state of mind when being physical. Totally. I've always considered myself a sexual person. Mm-hmm. And I always had shame about that. Mm-hmm. Until recently. I think it's so strange to me that we're given the gift of sex. Like, it's a beautiful, what? Like, totally. What do you mean? It's
amazing.
Like, the most amazing thing in the world.
Yeah.
And we obviously live in a society that shames us for that.
Yeah.
When ultimately, that's kind of the thing that connects us all, right? But
I think something that is difficult when you, and I know you're like still working on like unpacking everything that happened, but, and that's what I'm like, oh, like we do as women especially need to get better of, like, you sitting here and just not being able to fully say, and then like, you were taken advantage of.
Yeah. It's so interesting how my brain will try to make excuses for things, and is it right or wrong? I don't know, but it happened. And I think basically what I'm trying to say is, like, I don't think these people are bad people. It's just, so I'm only pausing because I've actually never talked about this element of it before.
Yeah.
And not even really with my therapist. This is just like a new top. This is like a new.
Yeah.
Remember I was talking about the trunk and like the emotional. I think, wow, we'll be doing a lot of journaling tonight, Alex.
Fuck, Lucy.
No, it's good. It's good. I think.
I appreciate you talking about it.
As women and as men, mm-hmm. like, there is so much shame attached to the type of people we've been with. Were we fucked up? Like, what actually did happen? Mm-hmm. Was it my fault? Should I have actually, you know? God, we just live in a world where we're just, like, all traumatized people, traumatizing people.
Dude, it's... Well, what I appreciate about you is, like, there's a level of, like, survival you have to get to where you're, like, you have to move on. You have to look back at a point of your life and be, like, whoa, I'm so happy I'm, like, not doing those certain things to myself anymore. But then there's also a moment where you have to be, like, our body remembers things.
Have you read that book, The Body Keeps the Score? I haven't read it, but...
It's fucking crazy. I'm sure there are moments, I have had them in my 20s, where I woke up, and this is so sad, I remember waking up and being like, did I have sex last night? Mm-hmm. And actually physically, like, trying to, like, mm-hmm. feel in my vagina, like, mm-hmm. did I have sex?
I know. I can't even tell you. I can't even tell you how many times I've been like, huh. And then I'd make excuses. I'd be like, well, I've kind of always wanted to sleep with him, so I guess it's okay. Mm-hmm. Or you know, just, like, making excuses. Or, but also, like, for so much of my life, I found I would fill this, like, empty well within myself yeah. with validation from men. So mm-hmm. I was like, well, if I sleep with them, like, I get this validation, and then I'm okay, and then I feel worthy for a week, and right. then I need to do it again. And I don't know, it was just a habit I picked up very yeah. very early on of, like, if I got the attention from men, I was okay to show up in the world.
Yep. Even I think something that's really relatable, and I bet a lot of people are going to connect with also, is, like, you talked about how when you would drink, you would have this, you would become the person you thought you wanted to be. You're outgoing, you're loud, I can be sassy, I can fuck, like, I can be hot, like, you can do all these things. And I know people in my life that are like, I'm introverted and I'm a little anxious or I'm shy, and having a couple drinks, like, I think brings me out of my shell and I'm able, mm-hmm. but it's like, then there's that line where it's like, you shouldn't need anything to, like, mm-hmm. that is a substance like that to make you feel like you can be yourself, because we're not ourselves when we're drinking.
Right.
But then sexually also, all of us are going to feel way more free having sex if we're fucked up on something.
Yeah.
But it's like, you don't actually know, and you don't feel in tune with your fucking body.
I'm even willing to say that sex drunk is not enjoyable.
At all.
Sex with strangers is not enjoyable. Point blank.
Yeah.
It's just the truth.
Yeah.
Maybe, and that's just my experience, but, mm-hmm. and that's why, like, the last 2 years of, I mean, I was, like, celibate for a lot of it, but,
right.
But I think, like, feeling so comfortable in my skin, mm-hmm. and, like, learning to love my body in new ways, mm-hmm. like, being sexual, like, it's still a little uncomfortable
yeah.
for me. I'm learning how to be really present and, you know, and choosing the people I want to be intimate mm-hmm. with. And not everyone deserves to touch your body, you know?
Facts. And, like, you can't make that decision as easily when you are fucked up.
No, I'm like, everyone can touch right. my body.
You're like, let's go.
Girl, guy, right. all, let's go. Yeah.
I just yeah. appreciate you going there with me and us unpacking the themes of just being like, oh, that's interesting. Next, like.
Well, I mean, that's a testament to you. You're so good there. At what you do, and you really create. With all of your guests, thank like, you know the right questions to ask, but you do it all with, like, a very...
Well, because it's, like, it's your life. Warm. Like, when people are like, so, talk to me about your fucking yeah. drinking problem. Yeah. You're like, okay.
So, here you're
like,
a slut.
People, right, literally. Like, who'd you fuck whore? You're like, oh, my God. People have said shit to me about, yeah. like, the craziest shit. I'm like, that's rude. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, this is great. Okay, relationships.
Your relationships, yeah.
I had many relationships. Mm-hmm. I don't think I've not had a relationship really since I've been sober. Mm-hmm. I've dated, but throughout all the, you know, teenager to mm-hmm. to now, like my last long-term committed relationship was like 6 years ago.
Okay.
And it ended, I mean, we were not compatible with each other at all, but it ended because of my behavior and like a lack of him not really understanding and not knowing how to be there for me. Him and I are now friends, and it's nice to, God, it's the best feeling to like reconnect with people in a different place in your life.
Mm.
And I'm finding that's happening a lot to me lately. Like people I've had embarrassing or shameful experiences with, like I've run into them on the street. There was someone I ran into in Vancouver on the street, and it was something happened, and I didn't really remember what had happened. It was a night, and I had always wanted to apologize.
Mm.
And I randomly ran into him in Vancouver, and not only did I get to apologize, he was like, Lucy, nothing happened. So I had like built, so in my life, I've like built these things up in my head. I say all of that because it's just interesting. The universe is like, we're going to give you an opportunity to hold yourself accountable and apologize. And it's like the best thing to be clear-eyed and feeling good and, yeah. and to get to reconnect with people.
When you were in these type of relationships, did a lot of your partners also drink heavily, or were you hiding it?
So my very first boyfriend ever that I had for 3.5 years when I was a teenager, I remember him telling me I had a drinking problem.
Okay.
My boyfriend after that, and he wasn't really a drinker.
Mm-hmm.
My next boyfriend after that, he also was like, this is worrisome. I'm like, I'm breaking up with you.
Bye.
Me, problems? You're the problem.
You're the problem.
Bye, babe. Cut to, you were right.
What?
You were right.
Fuck.
My boyfriend after that, God, it was the most passionate relationship of my life and the most toxic. He was a drug addict. He was an alcoholic. I learned habits from him. We were a perfect storm. But there was also a lot of love there. That was also a deeply scary time in my life. I was like, ooh.
Can you share some of those habits?
Day drinking. Drinking a bottle of wine before bed every night. At that point, I had never done a drug. And that was like when I was like, oh, I kind of like how that feels. It was a lot of just self-neglect. Mm-hmm. And it was like the day drinking thing. That was when I was like, oh, you can drink the day after? Huh, I never really thought about that. But also, you know, those types of relationships are the most exciting. Like, the most passionate, like, whoa. Like, I think, I'm like, if I were ever to be in a room with him now, it's still one of those people where I would be so, I'm equal parts terrified of him and deeply attracted.
Isn't
to him.
So crazy. I had one of those where it was like he was definitely into drugs, and there's like a thrill element of like the instability, like this person does not have their shit together, and it's like every day is fucking different, and it's this like exciting rush, and it's also what you don't realize is it's like uncomfortable fear that like you are thinking is like attraction, but you're also like, this is, you're my body telling me like I shouldn't be doing this.
Yeah.
And
it's exactly
crazy.
That. Like, my nervous system the whole time I was with him was like, I did not regulate my nervous system for a full year. But I also loved that because I told you I loved chaos.
Mm-hmm. You don't have to answer this, but I'm just thinking again because we're kind of tying things. Like, when you look at your life, I think sometimes in a positive way, you can be like, oh, that helps it make more sense. But like, a lot of how we are is because of our family. Like, does anyone in your family struggle with alcohol also? Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, I think it's just helpful to say, because sometimes people feel really fucking alone, and it's like, girl, you're not alone. This isn't, also, I don't know if it helps to be like, it's not your fault. This is like a genetic thing that like, that's life.
But it's also interesting to me that, you know, my sister doesn't struggle with alcohol, but we grew up in the same home. Obviously, our lives are very different, but it's just interesting how people latch on to something. And I think if I would have found cocaine at 16, that would have been my thing. But alcohol
was your thing.
that was my bestie for a long time.
When you said that you went to rehab, mm-hmm. when you got back, talk to me about like reintegrating after rehab, and then like when did you have another drink?
I'm only laughing because so before I went into rehab, I was talking to this guy that I was obsessed with. Uh-huh. I stayed in rehab. I got out. The day I got home, he flew in to see me. I picked him up, and he asked me to stop at a liquor store for him.
No.
And I remember him getting a bottle of Jack Daniels. And mind you, I still didn't drink for like 3 months after that. So I was like, what? Talk about not integrating.
Right.
Talk about I just had this like spiritual amazing experience. And this guy who that in itself was my life for so long, putting everyone else on a pedestal for so long. I'm like, why am I taking this guy, kissing him, and he tastes like Jack Daniels? But I'm just laughing because that was my first memory of getting out of rehab.
Solid.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah, crazy.
And then when did you relapse? 3 months after?
Yeah, it was always typically that. It was like 3 months after. I went to Vegas for a... Of course, I relapsed. Relapse in Vegas for a award show. Because what would happen was I'd be sober for a long time and think, you know what? I think I have a really good grip on my alcoholism mm-hmm. now. And I think if I just have rosé, I think I'm going to be fine. Mm-hmm. And you know what? I'm going to have a rosé and a water. And then maybe I'll have like a little Adderall just to like bring me back down. And like the one thing about like alcoholics that I love is like the rules that we, you know, mm-hmm. only beer, only wine, only on weekends, yeah. only every other week. But yeah, I'd get stuck in the cycle of I'd be sober for a month or two and then I'd relapse, then a week, then I'd relapse. Mm-hmm. And I was like a chronic relapser.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When you talked about that like New Year's moment when you got on the plane, was there something that happened that was like rock bottom?
I mean, in hindsight, like a lot of things that happened in my life would have been labeled as worse. But I think I was at a point in my life for this New Year's trip where I knew my drinking career was coming to an end. And I think subconsciously I knew that this New Year's was going to be the last hurrah. And it certainly was, but I think it was so scary to start drinking one night, to wake up like a day and a half later and have so much blank memory and be like, and I remember asking my friend, I was like, what are we doing tonight for New Year's Eve? And he was like, it's the first. And I was like, what do you mean? I was like, what do you mean? What do you mean? There's a whole day of my life I don't remember. And like blacking out was a very normal thing for me here and there, whatever. But I have a physical reaction to hearing him say it was the first. And I was just like, this can't be my life. This can't be my life. I refuse to let this be my life anymore. And I was so sad. It was just more like, and nothing really, you know, I don't even know if I left the hotel room. Like, nothing technically bad happened, but it was just that feeling of, how did I get here? Mm-hmm. I have everything I could ever want, and I'm going to blow it all. And it's a miracle that I didn't.
Yeah.
I think I did. I fucked up friendships. I fucked up relationships. I hurt my family. I did lose out on career opportunities, but like, I talk about guardian angels. Like, talk about knowing I'm supposed to be here.
Yeah.
And so, you know, whatever happened in Austin, like, something resonated. It was this feeling of like, maybe let's try it a different way. Mm-hmm. And I did. And I'm so proud. Yeah. I'm so proud that I did that. Yeah, and I often don't sit back and relish in the like, whoa, babe, like, you did it.
You did it. Thank you for sharing that. I literally got chills because it's like we as humans are just judgmental. Like, we either compare ourselves, but like, or we'll judge people because it's actually an insecurity of ours, or we'll judge because we don't understand something. I appreciate you sharing all this because it's so fucking hard to talk about something that you have any amount of shame over, and also something that, like, you've, as much as maybe people in your life have talked to you about it or told you, or you've broken up with boyfriends about it, like, it's on you. Like, it's mm-hmm. And also you've dealt with this alone, so it's like yeah. you were going through this alone, because mm-hmm. when you woke up, you were alone. Sure, even if there was a body next to you that you're like, what are you doing here? Yeah. Like, you're alone. And yeah. so it's on you to find your way out of it. That's fucking hard.
But that is the key to life, is like, the second you start taking accountability of, I'll just say it from my point of view. The second mm-hmm. I was like, okay, why am I in this weird fucking hotel room a day and a half later? Mm-hmm. Why am I sad? Why am I angry? It's, I have to take accountability of my life.
Yep.
No one else is going to save me. And I can't keep blaming other people for my own shit. Yep. It doesn't mean people can't help me, but ultimately all you have is yourself. Like,
yeah.
you have to fight and advocate for yourself.
I just love that we're talking about that. It's like, even if people are listening in, it's like, it's not alcohol. It's just like your life, whether you're unhappy, wherever the fuck you are, if you're unhappy about something, like, it really is. It sounds so fucking simple, but it's hard not to look around and try to blame others or mm-hmm. blame your circumstances. It's like, there is something so powerful about you sitting on that plane ride and just being like, yeah, it's got to end.
It's
got to change.
Yeah.
And I think that's fucking amazing that you're sitting here today and you clearly now are like, again, like we said, it's not easy. Mm-mm. It's never going to be easy.
No, but life is not easy and it's not supposed to be easy. That is what we signed up for as human beings.
Yeah.
Being a human is hard. It's hard mm-hmm. to navigate.
Yeah.
We all numb out in some way. Mm-hmm. We all try to escape.
Mm-hmm.
But there's something beautiful about not. What if we didn't? What if we were just uncomfortable? We'll get through it.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk to me about, obviously, like, recovery is not linear. Like, it's an ongoing process.
Mm-hmm.
In these past 2 years, trying, essentially, like, you're finding a new version of yourself. Because yeah. for so long, like, you were going off of, like, certain habits and routines and a lifestyle. And now it's all different.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk to me about, like, how it's been, things that you've struggled with, things that you're like loving about yourself?
Yeah, I mean, certainly not linear, and there is no right or wrong way to mm-hmm. heal. You know, there's so much advice out there. There's so much on the internet of like how to heal, and mm-hmm. and I think that's great, and I think that's when the internet is really beautiful. But I think ultimately, like, the only person that's gonna know what feels good in your body and your mind mm-hmm. is yourself.
Yeah.
So for me, it's like I've kind of had to like block out a lot of the noise and really get quiet with myself and like really figure out what actually makes me feel good. Because I had to have a moment where I was like, does my career make me feel good?
Mm-hmm.
Luckily, it does. Luckily, because God, that would have been a shit show. It's like I'm sober and I'm
changing careers.
Who knows?
Fuck.
What would I have done? But I, you know, just like, yeah, getting crystal clear on like the friendship. For me, it's like when you heal, you expect other people to heal with you. But like you're on a different path. You're on a different journey. And so certain things don't fit your life anymore.
Yeah.
And so obviously like the places I was going and day to day, that shifted a little.
Mm-hmm.
But people don't prepare you that like some friendships won't be the same. That's the hardest thing is like we talk about romantic breakups all the time, but like friendship breakups are hard. And so I've had to deal with that a little bit. And family dynamics have shifted. Boundaries.
Girl. Fuck.
Boundaries. You know, I was talking about being at peace mm-hmm. and how that felt uncomfortable. That's really what a lot of what my life has looked like. It's like, okay, am I bored or is this just really nice? And like being okay in stillness and not needing to fill my days with stuff just to avoid. Because what I found when I was newly sober was, okay, I'm going to work out 3 times a day. I'm going to, you know, read a book. I'm going to, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, why am I filling my days with all of these things? What if I just didn't?
Right.
What if I just didn't? And so it's like, I'm in this interesting place now where my relationship to my body and to food and to exercise is like the next thing for me to work on. I think just like being really gentle with mm-hmm. all of that. Yeah. I think that, not to like go back all into this, but I think the eating disorder fueled the alcoholism and they kind of fueled each other. Mm-hmm. And so like now that I'm sober, it's like, okay, now let's like really unpack this. And so, you know, my life is very simple. They're like, okay. I'm just a simple girl.
I'm a simple gal from Tennessee.
But, you know. No, but what I mean by that is I find joy in simple moments. I want to simplify my life. I'm trying to simplify my life. My mm-hmm. circle is small. I spend a lot of time with my dogs. I am on this whole... This will be for when I come back for part two of the podcast. We'll talk about spirituality because I do want to say that the spirituality element is what keeps me going. And it's brought a lot of clarity to my life of like, oh, but why am I really here? What is my purpose? How can I help leave the world a better place?
Yeah.
So it's like my priorities have really shifted into broader scale, I guess. And I think that that was maybe why I was also drinking is because I felt like I didn't have a purpose.
Yeah. I love that you just said, you know, like, it's okay. Like, is it boredom or is it just like you're just be still? And I feel like there's so many people that can relate to that moment where you're like trying so hard to just keep moving and keep going and keep doing and going here. Mm-hmm. And it's like, when you're uncomfortable in the silence and being alone with yourself, that's the first indicator you got shit to work on.
Shit to work on.
Because there's nothing better than when you are like so super cozy with yourself and you actually would 100 times over choose yourself to be alone and like go out and not, right? It's
literally the best. I'm at the point now where I, you know, I'm single. Mm-hmm. I don't know when this is airing, but... as of now, I'm single, and I have to.
Are you gonna get a boyfriend in the next 2 weeks, Lizzie?
I don't know. Should we have a dating show? And but my point in saying all that was like, I love my alone time. Mm-hmm. I love my life. I love my schedule, but I also do. You know, I do want a partner, and I want a family, mm-hmm. And I do have to put myself outside of my comfort zone because it does feel so cozy and safe in this like little world I've built for myself, but. He ain't gonna come knocking on my front door. Maybe he will.
I was about to say, I love how you're like, when is this coming out? I'm like, do you have someone in mind? I'm like, is he?
I do have someone in mind, but we're not dating.
Okay. But you've gone on dates.
We're supposed to. We'll see. And now that I've said it out loud.
It's happening.
Well, I don't know. We'll see.
So you've texted?
A little.
Okay. And you're gonna potentially go.
But this is me putting expectations on something. No, this is what I do all the time. I'm like, okay, how is he going to be as a dad? Like, it's like, no, just like calm down. But this is my extremist brain.
Yeah.
You know?
I get it.
But I also think that I'm at the point now, like, I don't want to casually date. I'm looking for something specific. And not everyone is looking for that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. We're just trying to manifest that into my life.
Do you have any, like, dating rules for yourself that you're like, this has to be? Like, is there anything on the list that you're like, this is like.
Don't be a raging alcoholic. Okay.
Lucy. You're like, don't
be, but also I do love an edge. No. I don't have any like don'ts, but I think it's more just like this place I'm at in my life,
mm-hmm.
where I'm at, the woman I've become. It's not for everyone, and I know that.
Yeah.
But it is for some people. Mm-hmm. And so it's more just like being completely in alignment with someone emotionally, mentally, physically, spiritually, it's tricky. It's very tricky to navigate. And I'm not willing to alter anything. I will compromise is a very different thing. But I think We're not settling anymore. Yeah, we're not settling.
No.
I made a song out of it.
We're not settling.
And break away.
Because we're not going to settle. Okay, we don't need an album. What I love about what you just said, though, is like how great you're now at a place in your life where you are so clear on the things that you need for yourself. And so if someone comes in, you're going to be able to be like, check, check. Oh, I can compromise on
that.
Oh,
I know immediately.
Yeah.
Usually.
But before you probably, and as we all go through that, where you're like, you almost become the partner that walks in the door. You become the guy that's the drug addict. You're like, oh, I guess I'll just like, we all go through that where we're so much more like, we are so much more susceptible to just becoming that relationship
sponge,
and being independent of like, this is what I bring. Can you meet me here?
Also, and people talk about this all the time, a lot of people are filling a void with the person they choose or the relationship they're in, because it's a lot of people settling or a lot of people trying to figure out their shit within a relationship. And that's not saying you can't. You can grow as a couple.
Yeah.
But I think I'm so grateful that I now feel more whole and can enter into a partnership now, because now I know how to treat people because I know how to treat myself. I can show up for someone. I can respect someone. I'm ready to love.
Oh, you know?
And I don't. And I wasn't always that way.
Right.
So.
Do you have a type? Yes.
Physically, no. Although my friends would be like, you love tall, dark, and handsome. I love a musician.
Bad boys, Lucy.
But I don't know if that's a lifestyle that's good for me. I don't know. But there's something about musically inclined men that really get my heart rate.
I get it. Just going. Turn on Spotify and listen to a song. Like, I feel like that girl, the touring and the drinking and the it's a lot.
It's a lot.
It's a lot.
But I do think I would love to end up with a creative of some sort. I don't really set rules for, like, I'm not saying, oh, he has to be in the industry or he has to not be in the industry. I think, like, having that level of understanding, it would be nice to be with someone who gets it.
Yeah.
But type, I'm more of a vibe gal. I have a very, like, a specific sense of humor. Not needing to be in the spotlight, but quick. I like going deep with people.
Right.
If you can keep up with me in conversations, like, that's sexy. Awareness is the, like, I will drop my panties for that immediately. I'm like a self-aware king. I've been dating for the first time in my life, and a lot of it is like, these people are not asking me questions. Why am I the only one asking questions?
Right. I was talking to someone about this the other day, that and they were like, the dates I've gone on, I'm getting to the point where I'm like, I'm just going to stop. I've been asking you questions the whole time, not in like a weird interrogative way, but like, I'm asking you questions, being respectful.
Are you curious
about
me?
Do you even remember my last name?
Yeah.
Like, where are we at?
I think it's a universal thing. And men, I love you. I do. But I think
it's not right.
I'm always taken aback when someone asks me a question, and not only that, a good question.
Like, I agree.
That to me, I'm like, oh, to feel seen and heard.
Have you had any bad dates recently?
I've never had any nightmare dates ever, but I definitely had one recently where I just knew immediately. I was like, oh no.
Why?
Because it felt like a rehearsed date.
Oh.
It felt like he was saying things that I think I had verbatim said in an interview before. And I'm like, okay, on one level, that's sweet. Like, he did his research, but also he wasn't in my industry. And I always feel a little weird when it's someone not in my industry, because like, I don't know people's motives.
Yeah.
Oh, my favorite thing though is I'm on a specific dating app, and when you're on this dating app, you can click on someone's name and you go to their Instagram, you know who they are. If you connect with someone, you're going to obviously Google who they are.
Of course.
But this has happened a few times where guys act like they don't know what I do for a living or who I am. And I'm like, okay, you might not have seen my work, but I don't believe that you connected with me and haven't Googled me.
It's
you're asking me what I do for a living?
Like, just stop. That's the craziest
thing. Am I crazy? Because no. I'm like, this is very bizarre.
You're not crazy, because what's crazy is social media. Everyone has it at this point.
I'm like, I know what your mom's sister's dog is doing right now.
Let's keep it real. Yeah. And even if you're not going to bring that up, you're not going to pretend you don't know what the dude does. Like,
it's so silly. But I think it's like a way of them being like, I don't care what you do. I'm a normal guy who wants you for all the right reasons. I'm like, yeah, but that is showing me that you want me for all the wrong reasons if you're being a phony.
Right. Like, imagine how much hotter it is for the guy to be like,
I respect your career.
This is so cool. Like, obviously, I don't know if I've watched everything you're in. Like, what was your favorite project? Like,
yes.
That was like when I went on a guy in New York City. I went on a date and he was like, what do you do for a living? And I was like,
this is when, well, you're engaged
this,
now.
No, but this was like right before I got engaged.
You had success.
Yes. And I was like, oh, like, I have a podcast. And like,
you're like the number one most successful podcast.
And at the time, he followed Dave Portnoy. He followed Barstool. I'm like, you know.
Thumbs down, you know. Dude.
And I'm like, oh, I have a podcast. He's like, oh, like, what do you talk about? And I'm like.
Meanwhile, you go look at his search history. He's listened to every episode.
No, I agree. Mm. I think that in this dating world with social media, it's better to be upfront. You don't have to say like, oh yeah, like, and go too deep of what you've stalked. But there's a level of like, let's keep it fucking real.
Let's be transparent.
Because then if not, you're like, this is weird. What are you hiding?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, if your fans and my fans can take one thing from this interview, what do you want them to take from this? Okay. Fuck. Where do we begin?
Okay. One thing?
Yeah, fuck. That's a lot.
Okay. I just think, for me, I didn't really have any women, at least that I had found, that were going through similar experiences. And I know that a lot of the things we talked about today were heavy, heavy hitters, mm-hmm. and make a lot of people uncomfortable. Like, a lot of people will not and do not want to talk to me about my sobriety or sexual encounters or trauma or whatever. But I guess, like, the one thing is, I just, if anyone's listening, like, just know that there's nothing to be afraid of. There's nothing to be ashamed of. And you're not alone. I think, like, you and I have both mentioned many times during this interview that we've felt alone or misunderstood. And I think it's just always nice to know that, very simply, you are not.
Yeah,
you are not. And I think that I'll end it with this. I watch very niche documentaries and I read very weird books, and just like, I'll find something. Like, the other day I was looking up crop circles, but the other day I was Googling fingerprints. I was like, how fucking amazing is it that there are no two fingerprints ever in the history of ever that are alike? If that doesn't tell you everything right there, there is only one you. Mm-hmm. There is only ever supposed to be one of you. And that is so fucking cool to me. Look at your finger. Like,
yeah.
It's, and so that to me just like wraps up what I'm trying to say, is that life is tricky, baby, but you're not alone, and things might not make sense, but they will eventually, because I felt that for so much of my life where I'm like, what the fuck is happening? And things eventually find their place.
They do.
Be gentle with yourself. Be kind. Please be kind to yourself. Yeah. God.
I cannot thank you enough for coming on, because like you said, I think it's so important to have conversations that may make people uncomfortable, because it's not what we're saying that should make them uncomfortable. It's because in some way we've been raised to think like showing any weakness and talking about things that you've gone through is a sign of weakness, and it's completely it's the complete opposite. You're so fucking strong for sitting here knowing millions of people are going to listen to this and watch you talking about something that so many people will relate to. And I think it's just the beginning of people actually realizing, like, damn, if she can just talk about this and overcome this, and also recognize, like, it's a struggle, it's okay. Mm-hmm. If you're relapsing, if you're, like, it is all going to happen. But by talking about shit, that's the most powerful thing.
And the most beautiful thing is, and also thank you for, this was so fun.
This was, right?
And you just really made me feel safe. And it was, very easy to open up about these things, because I don't always share this with everyone, and I do think it is maybe a part of my journey now to talk about these things. Yeah. And I hope it resonates, or that something I've said that might wake something up inside someone. I don't know. No. But honestly, thank you so much for having me.
Lucy, yeah. Thank you so much for coming on Call Her Daddy.
Thank you.
This episode is brought to you by DoorDash. Want $0 delivery fees? Try Dash Pass by DoorDash. Daddy gang, I love being home. I love to be cozy, comfortable, laying on the couch. I can't tell you how many times I need something, but I am too lazy to get up and get out of the house. And sometimes I need food or groceries, you name it. Dash Pass gets it delivered right to my door and yours too. It is only $9.99 a month, so I think it's a really good deal, Daddy Gang. So get $0 delivery fees on eligible orders with Dash Pass, and new members get a 30-day free trial. Terms apply. Sign up today.